I fell in love with the idea of that intersection between the code that we write and the people who use it, you know, the interface that provides access for people to do amazing things.
Welcome to the User Defenders Podcast, where we interview successful UX designers who fight for the user in order to inspire and equip you to do the same. And now, here's your host, Jason Ogle.
Greetings, User Defenders. Welcome to episode 8. I'm so thrilled to bring you an interview today with Ben Callahan. Ben is an upstanding guy, just a super human being, and I mean that in the most superhero type of way. You know, you come across these exceptional people in life that you always remember, and he's one of those guys. So anyway, I just want to tell you this interview is so great, and there was just a lot of emotional just kind of impact, I think, which is the goal of this show. But I think it just, there's some depth here, and I know you're going to enjoy the interview with Ben Callahan. So enough of that. I'll let you hear it yourself. Ben Callahan is the president of the insanely talented and nimble web studio Sparkbox in beautiful Dayton, Ohio. Ben is unquestionably one of today's foremost experts on responsive web design and building responsibly. He's an active blogger and TEDx speaker who has been invited to speak at pretty much any notable web design conference that exists. He's also a family man, a fellow coffee snob, and one of the nicest down-to-earth guys I've met in this industry. Welcome, Ben. I'm super excited to have you on the show today.
It's my pleasure. Thanks.
You bet. So I've broken the show up into three segments, and as you know, we're taking kind of the superhero approach. It's sort of a fun differentiator, yeah. You know. But we all look up to folks in you know, in anything we do. We always look towards someone else who's maybe done it before or done it maybe better than we have, so we can learn. So that's the sort of the idea here. And every superhero has a secret identity. Let's talk about yours. I'd like to start the show by you taking a few moments to give us a look into your personal life.
Sure. So, I have a lovely wife named Trisha, and we've been married almost 10 years, coming up on 9 here. So,
congrats.
Yeah, it's exciting. And again, as you mentioned, we live in Dayton, Ohio. We have two little kids, 5 and 7. Total blast. They challenge me in a lot of different ways. They make me see things from different perspectives, which I think is really healthy for all of us, no matter what we do. Mm. Let's see. I am a churchgoer. I attend a church here in Dayton, and I'm also a lover of volleyball and ping pong and pool and lots of different things. One thing that's kind of unique, I would say, is that we get some pretty cold winters here in Ohio. So the house my wife and I just moved into has quite a few places to burn real wood. So we have so one of my hobbies and one of the ways that I try to stay fit is to go out, find some trees that are down, cut them down, split them, and stack them, and have them ready to burn during the winter. So
Rocky Four.
Yeah, that's it.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah.
Tell us your starting out story. What inspired you to pursue UX design as a career?
Wow, I was actually a computer science major in college, and when I graduated, I took a job as a software engineer. I was basically working on an AS400 system, which is like an old school kind of mainframe-like machine made by IBM, and I was writing code all day long, fixing other people's bugs, basically. And the product we were creating was actually a querying language. So it allowed you to create reports against a database, but it was all like essentially like writing code to generate those reports. So this was about the time that native Windows apps were really taken off, and the team that I was on was creating this query language, but another team was formed inside the organization to create a GUI for the language that we were developing. So I was watching this happen. You know, I'm working on this command line interface essentially for generating reports, and I see this whole thing happening on the other side of the company where they're getting a chance to build this graphical interface to essentially behind the covers generate the code that I was supporting. And I was watching what they were doing, and I was just, it was so hard because I had all these ideas about what should be happening and how they should do things. And it just, I wasn't on that team. So in our meetings, I just kept bringing all these ideas up and I just kept emailing people. Eventually they were like, you know what, maybe you should move to a different team. So they let me jump onto that team for a little while. And I fell in love with the idea of that intersection between the code that we write and the people who use it, you know, the interface that provides access for people to do amazing things. And I got a taste of it there. And then I stepped down from that position because it was just an environment that I wasn't super excited about being in. It was pretty corporate. And I decided to start my own thing. So I had done some audio and video work, and I knew I could make a little money doing that. So I started a company with a friend doing that. And then we started to take on some web projects. And that's where I first got, you know, I read Jeffrey Zeldman's book. And it completely changed my whole perspective on the web and what we could do with it. And I started to realize there was a beautiful spot for me, which was this idea of like front end development. You know, I could write code, but the code that I wrote resulted in an interface that a user had to figure out, you know, and that's where I wanted to be. So, that's kind of how I got started. I did my first website for like $500 or something, you know, nice. And then, just started to double the price each time until we, you know, had reasonable budgets, and I merged that company with three other solid folks, and you know, here we are, Sparkbox. So
awesome. You've come a long way since making TPS reports, right?
Yeah, no kidding.
Awesome. If you weren't doing this for a living, Ben, what would be your second career choice and why?
I'm a musician, so nice. I would definitely enjoy that. I think partly I you know, when I went to college, I considered doing, you know, music as a major, and I was actually talking about maybe doing a double major, but there's zero overlap between music and computer science. So it was going to be like a 7-year degree or something, you know?
Right.
So I decided to go with the comp sci. I don't know. I think I could be a teacher. I one of the things I love about my job now is that I get an opportunity to speak and teach and share some of the things that I'm learning. So I would say a teacher or musician, maybe.
Very cool. And you certainly are exercising your teaching abilities with all the speaking events that you do. So, and I for one of many, appreciate you sharing your knowledge and your experience.
Yeah, it's an honor to be able to do it, honestly. So glad to hear that it's impactful.
Absolutely. Who has been your biggest inspiration in your work and why?
Biggest inspiration. Man, there's so many.
It's hard to pick one, right?
It really is. Yeah. I don't know. I feel like the folks that inspire me, certainly there are those in the industry that do, you know. I've always looked up to Jeremy Keith. I think his perspective on the web as a set of tools, essentially as access, you know, for the world to content. I think his perspective on that is spot on. Progressive enhancement, those kinds of things. Mark Bolton is another guy that I've always just had a tremendous amount of respect for. Mm. He has a post about, you know, designing, you know, from the content out, which I think is just tremendous. I read that post 2 or 3 times a year just to kind of reset myself, you know. I mean, there's so many others. There's people in the CSS world that I just look up to. There's and then there's a ton of people outside of those worlds, you know. You've heard me probably share a little bit about my love for Miles Davis and Bill Evans. I feel like some of the work that they did in, you know, in the 50s, you know, really kind of shifting our mindset around what it meant to improvise in music, you know, getting a group of people together and saying, you know what, we're not just going to have one of us improvise while the rest kind of vamp on these set of chords. Instead, we're going to actually all improvise together, and we're going to figure out what this music is together. You know, that's hugely inspiring to me. I feel like there are a lot of parallels in what we do in this industry. You know, all the projects we work on are a little different. So to have that flexibility in our process, I think is needed. I don't know, but I gave you way too many probably already.
No, that's awesome. And I just want to take a moment to think about and talk about the Miles Davis, I just want to touch on that because I love how you've been able to incorporate that experience that's so, you know, like you said, not parallel to really to what we do today, but how you were able to take that inspiration and that influence and experience and bring it into to sort of how we build the web today. And I just want to tell our defenders listening that they have got to watch your TEDx talk where you really dive into that. And I'm going to make sure I put a link in the show notes to that.
Sure. Yeah. That's had a big impact on me just as a person and how I approach a lot of things in life, but certainly how we build for the web. So
absolutely. And I will tell you, man, I was really moved by it. So,
well, thank you. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. What's one habit that you believe contributes to your success, Ben?
I have in the past, I would say 2 years, tried to be really diligent about thinking about my day before the day begins. So this is like just super, it's super basic, but I don't start the morning typically in my office. You know, I get up and you know, if it's school time, I'm helping the kids get ready and all that stuff, get them dropped off at school. But I'll typically pop into a local coffee shop here, just grab a cup of coffee, sit down. And before the day gets going, I open my email, before Twitter, all that stuff, I try to just take a moment to kind of pause, think about what's really important in life to me, and think about, you know, what I really need to get done. And I like to start with kind of a blank piece of paper for the morning, you know, because a lot of times I make these lists of things. I've got running lists and Wunderlist and all these other tools and all that, but to take a few moments to just kind of pause and slow down a little bit and think about what's actually important for me for that day and what I need to accomplish. I think it kind of helps reset, you know. You can kind of focus in on the things that matter. And I think for me, it helps me to when I'm in scenarios with people on my team or with, clients or whatever, if I've done that, I feel like I'm actually able to be a little bit more present in those scenarios, in those situations, which I think is really important. So, yeah.
I thought you were going to say AeroPress. Just kidding.
Well, hey, man, on the weekends, that's where I'm at. Actually, I know you're a coffee guy. I was in Italy. I got the chance to go to Italy with my family earlier this year, and it was an amazing experience. But I had some espresso there brewed in their mocha pot, which is a little, you know, I don't know if you've ever had it from one of these devices, but man, Berletti mocha pot, I think is what it's called. It's just tremendous. So I ordered one of those things. It's like $30 or something. It makes a great cup of coffee. So
I have not tried a mocha pot. I'm definitely familiar with it. But it's amazing to me that all of these original brew methods going back 50 years ago are like the hipsters are all now just discovering like, hey, this is really actually the best way to make coffee still.
Yeah. So good.
Like the Chemex, for example, as well. But anyway, I really appreciate your answer to that. And I love the takeaway. Just think about what's important before you even start. That's just great. Can you tell us about one thing you're working on that you're most excited about?
Yeah. Let's see. I'm going to take this in a direction you're probably not expecting.
Great.
But one thing that I've been working on lately is to be more diligent in writing. I have been focused on, you know, for a long time, I've had this sort of, I'm a perfectionist in a lot of what I do. So I've had this tendency to try, you know, when I sit down to try and write, I tend to not do that well because I'm so focused on making the words perfect. And I've been, reading stuff from good writers and working with a few friends of mine who also want to get better at this. And one thing that I want to do, you know, at some point in my life is I want to write something long form, you know, books, that kind of thing. I've had a few opportunities to do that and have kind of passed up on them because I haven't felt that the timing was right or the situation was right. But I don't know. I'm not sure if it'll even be about the web or about UX. But
fascinating.
So I've been trying to spend a little bit of time. Part of my morning routine is to get, you know, half an hour of writing in. And to have that sort of regular, a recognition, I think a self-recognition that what I write is not going to be perfect, but I got to get some words out. I think that that's really helping me clarify my thinking around a lot of things. I find that I learn a tremendous amount when I write. It's like it kind of forces me to put words around very specific thoughts, and you know, formulating those thoughts in words really helps clarify what's, you know, what I actually mean by, you know, those statements. So that's something I'm really excited about. I'm not sure where it's going to lead, but we'll see, I guess.
I love that. And it's inspiring to me. I just started blogging this year for the first time in 15 years of doing this. It's just, it's a deep dive into the person's mind and into their, you know, perception. And so I totally agree with you. And I'm trying, that inspires me because I'm trying to get into a better habit as well of writing and not correcting myself. Just get the first draft out.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Just get it all out and you can always edit later. Right.
Yep.
Right now, blush later.
Yep. I was listening to a podcast with Malcolm Gladwell about his writing process, and somebody, the gentleman interviewing him, said, "So, explain what it's like if you're going to write a 6,000 word piece for the New Yorker or something." And he said, "Well, I would probably in 6 weeks write six or seven drafts of a single piece, you know."
Wow.
And I'm like, wow, man, I've got a long ways to go, you know.
Yeah.
It's just crazy the amount of work and effort and thought. And just he just writes as if it's, you know, as if it's going to be thrown away, as if it's going to be changed, because knowing that it's going to be changed, you know.
Mm.
And I think it's like that idea of embracing that editing process, I think, is really critical. So
that's great.
Let me give you one other thing I'm excited about too, if that's okay.
Sure.
We've just had a really lucky opportunity to be able to work with the CodePen crew, Chris Coyer and his team who are building CodePen. And so I'm just super excited about the work the team is doing on that. We had a version one sort of released, which has kind of been a redesign, but it's really been about the users. You know, we did a ton of research, with CodePen users. We made a bunch of subtle design adjustments. One of the things that was interesting about that project is CodePen has a strong brand already, you know,
sure.
And the people who use it they love it, you know. So we didn't want to do something that pulled it so far away from the good work that they've already done, but we wanted to sort of evolve it, you know. And so I'm just super proud of Jeremy and Katie and Melissa, the folks on our team who have really kind of driven that project here. It's been tremendous, and they've done a great job of documenting it too. So I'll send you a link to the there's a microsite that has all the work we've done for the past, you know, 4, 5, 6 months.
Cool.
Just well documented. So and we got lots more coming, so we're excited about that one.
Well, that's great. And I will be sure to link that in the show notes as well. I know that our listeners will definitely want to take a look at that as well. I can't wait to see what you guys do there. Yeah, let's get into your transformation. This is the second segment. Every superhero goes through some sort of transformation where they realize the powers they have and they harness them for the greater good. So what's your design superpower, Ben?
Oh, man. my design superpower. So it's funny. I don't really consider myself much of a designer, but I do like the, and I mean in sort of the traditional sense, you know, I do think that, you know, design is all about intention. So I am intentional in the things that I do. So I'll think about it from that perspective. And maybe I will say I'm a very curious person. It's not enough for me to see that something works. I need to know how and why. And so I think for me, you know, my design superpower would be curiosity or something. Maybe that's an annoyance more than a superpower, but just sort of an unrelenting, you know, desire to ask a million questions about things. And we run an apprenticeship here. One of the things that I love about the apprenticeship, it's the first 6 months of each year. One of the things I love about that is that we have young folks who don't have a lot of experience in this industry in our office. It gives us a chance to teach them, but it also, man, they ask some really good questions, you know.
Right.
they want to know why we're doing things the way we're doing them. And it's unbelievable how many times they ask those questions, and it forces us to rethink the way that we're approaching something, because we do it that way because we've always done it that way, you know? So
right.
I love those kinds of engaging, you know, experiences where people are really challenging, what your default is. So I don't know, curiosity.
That's a great one. And, you know, if we're not curious, I don't think we're going to be successful in this field, because really we have to know, we have to have curiosity. We have to know why we're doing what we're doing to be successful. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Adversely, what's your design kryptonite?
I feel like I have this, I tend to balk when people show me, design that is maybe very good in terms of, you know, foreign experience, but too closely follows what I feel are sort of trendy decisions in the design space. So, ironically, I think there's, you know, trends become trends because they probably are successful in some way, right?
Sure.
And so there's a lot to learn from that. And I think my tendency is to say, you know what, if it's trendy, I don't want to do it. It's like I don't want to be associated with that. But I think there's a lot of good that comes from that, too. And so I'm probably a little weak in that area. I need to be a little more open-minded about that. I don't know. Is that what you're getting at?
No, that's it's funny because I'm actually writing something. I'm writing about that right now, about design trends and, you know, how do we get out of it? How do we break out of it? But then, you know, adversely, it's like, well, you know, it's a trend because there's probably a good reason for it. So,
yeah,
you know, that's the thing, mental models and all that. So I appreciate that answer for sure. So this is kind of a fun one. And it's, the question is, what would your UX design superhero name be? And let me preface that question because, you know, it's fun to talk about being a superhero, but I know that you'll be the first to admit that you did not get where you are on your own, and you have an incredible team. I know that firsthand.
I do.
For sure. So just for the sake of this show and, you know, being the success, the level of success that you've achieved in your career, you know, what would your UX design superhero name be?
So, you sent me this one ahead of time. So I did a little, to be transparent. So I did a little thinking on this.
Great.
And it actually relates to your caveat about the question. So that's good.
Ah, cool. Good, good.
I think I would be Mr. Middleman. And and a lot of times I think people think about the thing in the middle as the annoying sort of getting in between conversations. But what I've learned is, and I learned this early in my career, there are folks who are amazingly engaging with other individuals, right? They love people. They dig in with others. They ask questions. They learn. They interpret. They can read between the sentences, you know. And there are people who are really good at software development and design. And sometimes, you know, you have folks on your team who are not good at both. And one thing I think that's helped me a lot in my career is the ability to interact with people in a way that makes them feel comfortable, but also to get in and write some code when I need to. So like the idea that that I can hear a customer share what they think they need and then interpret that and translate that with our team, you know, in a way that I think actually helps us to build the thing that they truly need. So I think that idea of sort of playing that role in the middle and being able to translate, you know, the business needs to technical features and that sort of thing. Does that make sense?
It does. It sure does. And I appreciate that answer. That does make a lot of sense. And I know that because you can kind of play all positions on the field, I think. And, you know, you've kind of settled into a place where you're able to really lead. You're able to really lead a charge. And so I love that. That's awesome. None of us like to talk about failure, but it is certainly something that we all grow the most through and we all learn the most through. And if you could take a minute and tell us a story about what's been your biggest failure in your career.
I don't know. I feel like every day is just full of little tiny ones, you know?
Sure, sure.
It's really hard to sort of put your finger on one. I mean, we did a project once with a customer that it was a nonprofit. We were super excited about the mission, the work they were doing. And we had a contact here in the States. They were based in Africa. And we had a contact here in the States who was finishing up his tenure with the organization, but his last main job was to help them get a new website built. They have people all over Africa doing really good work with a population that's in desperate need of food and water, you know. And one of the things they wanted to be able to do was to provide the ability for those individuals to write about some of the stories they were experiencing. And so we had this really unique opportunity, I think, to tell some powerful stories. And we kind of assumed that the individual we were working with here in the States had the authority to make a lot of the decisions, even though this person wasn't, you know, wasn't the owner, wasn't the founder, I guess, of the nonprofit. But he assured us that our work was good and that what we were doing with him was what was needed. And we spent a lot of time building a really, really neat platform for them. I was so excited about to see this thing in the wild. And, you know, we interacted with him primarily as, you know, our design critique, our UX critique, our implementation, all of that. And come to find out at the very end that he, you know, hadn't been showing it to the founders. And when he finally did, they looked at it and just very quickly dismissed it and kind of said, oh, this isn't really us. We need something that's a little different. Mm. And we had spent months and months, you know, under the impression that this was going to be something that would actually help their organization. And, you know, and we put our heart and soul into it, you know. And so that was incredibly frustrating. And I look back at that and there were so many signs when you know, it's like the hindsight thing, 2020, oh, right? Yeah. But when I look back at it, there's so many signs that I should have picked up on. And I think, you know, one thing that I've definitely learned out of that experience is that you have to pay attention to your gut, you know? And like, I could sense that this was going to be a challenge, but I guess I didn't have the courage to speak up. And, you know, I mean, my partner, Rob, in the business, he and I kind of work mostly on the business here at Sparkbox. He always says he wants to optimize for sleeping at night. You know, he wants to make decisions in Love business. It. He wants to make decisions in life that allow him to be able to go to sleep without, you know, feeling stress, without questioning if he's made the right decisions, you know. So I think that requires you to pay attention to your gut and listen to those kind of, you know, non-objective feelings that you get when you're in the middle of something. So
huge takeaways. Yeah, yeah. Listen to your gut for sure. And yeah. I loved Rob's quote. I'm going to hang on to that one.
Yeah.
That's great. Yeah, I dig Rob too. I had the privilege of meeting him when I met you guys.
Yeah.
Great guy.
Hello, this is Josh Clark. I'm the author of Designing for Touch. And friends, this is User Defenders, defending the user against noxious user experiences. Go get them.
Do you have, this is a fun one too. Do you have a story of something really crazy or super awkward that happened during user testing?
Yeah. I mean, I can think of some scenarios where, we were working with a customer, and we were doing some testing on, I'm trying to figure out how much information to give you here. it was a responsive redesign of a large site, and they wanted to test, and they had these theories about, on small screens about the fold. And you know, and one activity that I have noticed repeatedly as I watch people use small screen experiences, you know, use a small screen on the web in any capacity, is one of the first things people do when they open up a site and they're on their phone or on a small screen is they just start scrolling. You know, they're swiping up and down. They're just trying to learn what the heck is they're getting context, you know. Mm-hmm. On a larger screen, I think we have more real estate. We get a bigger sense for what's happening, you know, in a single screen than when we're on a small device where we're just so limited in real estate. So I've known that for a long time. But we had a user or a customer who was just like absolutely 100% sure that the fold was the most important thing. And, you know, so we did some usability studies, and we saw them just time after time. People would open up the device and just immediately start scrolling. And it was this awkward moment where the client was just kind of like having to sort of acknowledge that our recommendations originally were actually accurate. And, you know, there was a lot of, I don't know, it was an awkward moment for sure. So.
Yeah, that's great. One of my favorite lines from Tron was when he said, "I fight for the users." How do you fight for your users, Ben?
Oh, man. I mean, it's a cultural thing, right? I mean, every person here on my team has to care about them first and foremost. So You know, that's it. Right? In my mind, it's not about any one thing that you do in a project. It's not about any development technique or any interviewing technique or any, you know, user interface design approach or anything or trend. You know, it's really more about investing in how do I do it? I invest in the people at Sparkbox, and I try to build into them a desire to love the user, to care for the user, to try and place themselves in the user's, you know, mindset. That's in my mind. That's the only way that you can do it. It's got to be. It's everybody's job. It's not just UX designers. You know, it's the design. It's the front end developers who are crafting that interface. It's the people building the interface in the CMS. You know,
right.
So it's everything. And it's for us. We even think about our customers' experience with us as a big selling point. Right. We try to be genuinely nice people, so that the interaction people have with us as an organization is a positive one. And I come out of that. That means is that I come out with a lot of friends who are clients. You know, clients that become friends. And so I don't know.
Yep, UX is everybody's job, and a great start is empathy.
Yeah, having absolutely, empathy. Absolutely.
Now, how do you guys measure the success of your designs?
That's a good one. A lot of times, it's never as simple as I would like it to be.
Right.
Recently, we've had an opportunity to kind of work with a gentleman in the industry. Well, you probably know Dan Moll.
Super talented guy.
And he's been working. We had a chance to work with him on one project, and the opportunity we had with him was to kind of go through his kickoff process. And you know, he has this method of sort of laying a bunch of things out in a kickoff scenario and gathering a ton of feedback beforehand and presenting that to your customers. And one of the things that he does is he does a really good job of saying, hey, let's talk about what's truly important to you. How do we, you know, asking our users, how do we measure the success of the work that we do? Mm. And so he does that well. He documents exactly the kinds of things that they might need to see internally as an organization in order to prove the value. And then he puts that all into a manifesto document, which is something that kind of lives and evolves with the project itself. And it becomes this sort of filter through which you can make decisions on your project. When your client comes to you and says, hey, you know what, I know we talked about building this, but I was out, shopping and online, and I came across this experience, and I thought maybe we should do that. You can take that suggestion and say, oh, that's a great idea. Let's look at that through the lens of our manifesto, right, the goals that we've established for the project, and let's see if it makes sense, you know. And if it does, then great, you know, make some adjustments. If it doesn't, then you either need to push back in that scenario, or you need to say, hey, you know, are we shifting the overarching goals for the project as well? Because these don't necessarily align, you know. So I think that gives us a way to measure, you know, sometimes objectively, sometimes subjectively, but it gives us a way to measure, you know, if we're meeting the goals of the project. And sometimes it's very specific things like, hey, we need to, you know, increase conversion on this specific activity, or we need to increase traffic. You know, that could be it. Or sometimes it's something like decreasing time on site. You know, we don't want people hanging around for so long. They need to get here, figure out what they want, and get on with things, you know. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of different factors that could be involved. So
fascinating. And who'd have thought that maybe it'd be a problem if somebody's on your site too long, right? I mean,
yeah.
A lot of people are like, we need them there longer, you know?
But
that's a really good point.
Yeah.
And I also, thankfully, with Lean UX movement and everything, it's a lot easier to you know, test early and often and iterate upon that.
Yeah, absolutely. We have a project we're working on now where we did a bunch of prototypes and we used, I don't even remember which framework, we used some framework just to prototype out a few flows to get those in the hands of our customer immediately, you know. And it was literally like 2 or 3 weeks into the project, to a long project, you know, very early. And we had a bunch of this stuff churned out, and they were able to try things and see. They were having a hard time as we explained some of our recommendations. So we thought, well, let's just quickly build them, you know, and that's powerful stuff. So
absolutely. So this is the last question of this segment, but it's a big one. What does the future of UX look like to you?
I mean, I feel like we're in a position now where people expect things to be tailored to them. You know, if I sign into Netflix, it shows me recommendations just for me. You know, mm-hmm. It even lets each of the people in my family have their own set, you know, their own profile, right? So, you know, I wonder how long it is until that level of sort of individual preference is filtered into the actual experience, not just the content of a site, you know, of an application. I think I can see like hints of it. You know, when you look at like if you embed a YouTube video on a website somewhere, I can choose as a user of that site to watch the high def or the standard def. You know, they're giving me an option. You know, if I'm on my phone on a slow connection, I can choose to request a smaller download. But man, what if I could also choose, you know, or if they could sort of remember things about me as a user, what my preference is. You know, some people are searchers, some people are navigators, right? So like, if there was some way to communicate my preference for that, sites could sort of present to me, the searcher, a better interface for me, you know. So I love the idea of kind of customizing and letting users give you information about themselves so that you can customize the experience for them. I'm not sure how that actually will end up working, but I think it'd be pretty neat.
No, I think that's a terrific answer, and we're already seeing a movement happening out there. You mentioned Amazon. I mean, they're pretty good at predicting what we want to buy and putting it right in our face when we don't have any money to buy it. Yeah. And then Spotify, you know, they have this Discover Weekly playlist now that, based on all of my other listens or playlist saves, they're aggregating every week content and a good percentage of it I'm interested in.
Yeah.
So the only thing that creeps me out is when I visit a site and then I go somewhere else and I see that product in a banner.
Yeah,
still don't like that.
Weird. It's weird. But all of those things, those are great examples, but those are all content based, right?
True.
So I'm excited about how that could, you know, impact the way that an interface is actually built. You know, if I show a propensity to always, you know, drill down through navigation, well, I'm probably not a searcher. So how do we prioritize the hierarchy of content on a site? If I show, you know, a desire to always search, like some people just, that's their thing, right? They hit a site, the first thing they do is search.
Right.
And, you know, if that's the case, if that's the kind of user that I am, then how do we prioritize that in the interface? You know, I don't know. A lot of different ways that could be done, maybe, but
that is provocative. I love it. I'm sure we'll see that.
I hope so.
So let's wrap up with superpowers.
Oh boy.
these are easy. What's your most invincible UX resource or tool you can recommend to our listeners?
UX resource. I mean, I can think of so many. I love the work that Jared Spool's doing at UIE. I think he's got a whole library of videos, of presentations. I think there's just some tremendous, tremendous content there. I also think, I mean, this is totally generic, but I mean, if I have a question these days, and I'm sure you're like this too, it's like, just go to Google. I mean, there are so many brilliant UX designers writing about the problems they're solving, you know?
Yeah.
And I mean, we have access to so much information, and there are definitely, you know, places where it's aggregated, like at Jared's site, but there are also tons and tons and tons of people just writing about everyday work that they do that is tremendously valuable. So, you know, I mean, man, it's, the power is in the hands of the people right now, and we just need to find it, you know.
That is so true. There's so much great content out there, and I'm really enjoying my Medium subscriptions too. I get an email every day where it's like, hey, you're subscribed to UX whatever, and here's 10 pretty high quality articles here.
Yeah, seriously.
So that's great. If you could recommend one book to our listeners, what would it be and why?
I'm reading a book by Alice Goffman right now. It's completely changing my whole perspective on a lot of different things. And it's about It's about a group of young men who live in the inner city of Philadelphia, and she essentially just follows their life. It's called On the Run.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It's, I think the subtitle is like Fugitive Life in an American City.
I've heard of this book.
It's changing a lot of the way that I think about just life in general. And I think the reason that came to mind is because, I mentioned this with my kids earlier too. And I feel like one of the things that we have to be able to do to be successful in this industry is to be able to put ourselves in other people's situation. And it's that empathy thing again, you know, and it's like Alice's book, she just puts you in this situation that is, for me at least, completely different than I ever would have imagined it is. And it's really kind of shaken me to my core a little bit, you know, and I cannot recommend it enough. I'm only about halfway through, and it's really a tremendous piece. So wow. I would definitely recommend it.
Awesome. I appreciate it. I can tell in your voice too, that it's a good read.
It is so good.
What's your best advice for aspiring UX design superheroes?
The simple thing I would say is don't be afraid to make stuff, you know, put it out there. You only get better by trying, you know. I say that because I think that's the advice I wish I would have been given when I was first getting started. You know, it's taken me a long time to get to a point where I feel comfortable sharing the things that I'm thinking without going through this massive validation process of, is this actually right? And, there's a lot of opportunity out there for people who are willing to take some risk. You know, Ben Sidran is an old jazz musician. I heard him on an interview once talking about music, but I think it applies, you know, to us. He said, without the possibility of failure, there's no possibility for real success. And I love that, right? Because what he's saying is you can't just do the same old things. You have to push yourself to do something new. You have to try something that's outside of your comfort zone. And you got to push yourself to be willing to try those things if you want to have real success, you know? So try stuff, get out there, put it out on the world for the world to see, and be ready to let your skin get thick, because it'll be painful too, but it'll make you better, you know?
Oh, so good. So good, man.
Yeah.
As we close, why don't you tell our audience the best way to connect and to keep up with you, man?
Sure. Definitely on Twitter. I'm out there pretty much every day. It's just Ben Callahan. And I write at words.bencallahan.com and on the Sparkbox Foundry, csparkbox.com. Those are probably the best ways.
Awesome. And I'll be sure to put all of these links in the show notes as well for easy access. Yeah.
Excellent.
Well, Ben, my friend, thank you so much for being here today. I have had an immense pleasure chatting with you, and I love our conversation. I know our listeners are going to get so much value out of this. So really appreciate it, man.
I appreciate you having me on. It's a pleasure.
Awesome. Well, hey, fight on, my friend.
Cheers.
How about that interview with Ben Callahan? Man, what a great guy. What a just a deep individual and thoughtful individual, and just a terrific leader for his one awesome organization out there in Dayton, Ohio, Sparkbox. So if you enjoyed the episode, would you do me a huge favor and leave a rating and review on iTunes? I'll leave a link in the show notes to do that. Highly encourage you to join the email list over at userdefenders.com to just keep up with when we release new shows and to be among the first to know who it is and what it's about. So if you want to contact me for any reason, it's userdefenders@gmail.com. Thanks again for listening, and until next week, fight on, my friends.